The Oldie Lunch Recordings presents Vince Cable talking about his book, After the Storm, The World Economy and Britain's Economic Future, sponsored by Doro, number one in the senior mobile market.
Well, thank you, Barry, and thank you very much for inviting me back. I was here 7 years ago. I shared a platform with the late Terry Pratchett and Terry Wogan, but it's sadly missed. But it's great to be back with you 7 years older, though having been in the cabinet for 5 years, I feel an awful lot older than 7 years more, but nonetheless. I think that the way I see this event is it's partly, of course, we're promoting our individual books, but I'm promoting books in general. I feel very indebted to books, not just because it helps to supplement my pension, but because I'm a reader. And I found that in my 5 years in government, which are probably the most grueling 5 years of my life, it was the thing that actually kept me sane. That, you know, going to bed at night with a good novel, and instead of lying awake all night thinking what you're going to say to the reporter who's camped outside the front door, it is a very therapeutic experience. And certainly the other thing that did keep me sane during those years was my weekly dancing class. And I've got sort of slightly good news for you, because I used to go every Friday afternoon to Erin Bogue's studio in Kingston, and I learned. And my great ambition in life when I got out of politics, which I now am, was to go off and compete in the national championships in Blackpool, which I do. And they've now introduced a new category for the over 70s. So those of you who have an interest in this, there is hope. We don't have to compete with all these acrobatic 50-year-olds anymore. But let me just say a little bit about my book. It's a sequel, as Barry said, to a book I wrote 7 years ago at the outset of the financial crisis. And I've been struggling, I suppose, trying to get a good metaphor that properly captures what happened at that time. And I've used this climatic one, but I think if I'd had my time again, I'd have used a medical one. And I know this may be a slightly uncomfortable in our age group, but it was the kind of economic equivalent of a heart attack. Because throughout the post-war period, you know, we had these ups and downs, we had boom and bust, temperatures go up, they go down again. But actually what happened in 2008 was something much more fundamental. It was a real shock to the system. Fortunately, you know, like medicine, economics has advanced a bit. And the people who are running the world, you know, the central bankers, Bernanke in America, Mervyn King here, and the chancellors of the time, you know, saved the patient. You know, the world goes on. You know, it was a big shock, but there was a recovery. But what I write about in the book is the legacy of that shock. And we're perhaps not aware of this, that although we have recovered collectively, we're still on a life support system. The life support system is cheap money. Interest rates virtually zero and actually now negative in parts of the world. Money being pumped into the system through what's called quantitative easing. It's a bit like adrenaline. You know, you need that medicine to keep you going. And what the people running the system haven't yet worked out is how to stop it. And it is having all kind of strange consequences. Puffing up the price of property is one of the consequences. And one of the brightest people in the Bank of England has recently done a bit of research into interest rates over history, and came to the conclusion we've now got the lowest interest rates since the days of the Babylonians. And it is a bizarre world that we live in. And this is the adrenaline that's keeping the patient going. So, yeah, we've been saved and we're back to normal, sort of. But there is this aftermath, there is this legacy, and I write about that. But there was a political consequence as well, which was the formation of the coalition. That was my political experience. I think it won't happen again, probably for a long time. But I think, as somebody who was part of it, I think it was absolutely right in the consequence. I don't think actually we had any alternative. There was no other combination of parties back in 2010 that could have made a stable government. As you may have read, I spent several nights on the phone to Gordon Brown and other people trying to look at other possibilities, but none, actually, the numbers just didn't add up. My small party could have walked away from it, but we took the view that since there was a major financial crisis, we had no alternative but to step up to the plate and take responsibility of government, which we did. And one of the remarkable things was that it actually worked. And I remember the first cabinet meeting, which we attended, and we were all trying to capture some of the spirit of the occasion. And I pointed out that somebody who'd married into an Indian family, that you know, arranged marriages often work much better than love marriages. And that's essentially what the coalition was about. And you may have heard some of the quarrels, but actually it was a grown-up relationship. It lasted the course. I had 8 ministers in my department. It was one of the biggest departments in government. We had 2 Lib Dems, 6 Conservatives. They changed. But I had a very simple mantra, which is that when you come into the department, you leave your weapons at the door and we get on with our job. And we did. And a lot of reforms were made. And there were many things, for example, I disagreed with George Osborne about. But we did work together pretty well. If you take the banking system, when I came into government, I wanted to do really radical things and break up the banks. He wanted to keep things pretty much as they were. But we compromised, and we introduced legislation, which the so-called ring fencing of banks, which has gone through Parliament, has made the banks safer. It's probably the most radical reform of banks in the Western world. And we did it as a result of sensible, grown-up working together. What I try to address in the book is where we now are, you know, economically and politically. And economically, yeah, I mean, we've recovered. You know, the economy's growing. Most people are in work. But I don't think we should be complacent, because as a country, we're still massively, heavily overdependent on the finance sector, banking, in an unhealthy way, I think. We're still heavily over-dependent on rising property prices as a way of keeping people feeling good and spending, very unhealthy. But in other respects, you know, the British economy has done remarkably well in the last 7 years, given where we started from, having the biggest banks in the world based here and collapsing on us. Let me just make one penultimate point. Is much of the book that I've written is about the UK and our experiences here, political and economic, but it is important to remember that we're part of a wider international system. And the big thing which has happened in our lifetime had an enormous impact on the crisis and is now affecting the way in which we evolve from it, is what's happening in China. I mean, you all, you know, you've seen on the news, you've read about it, probably you've been there on holiday. But the thing that really brought this home to me was I used to go fairly regularly as a government minister to talk about trade. And I remember being taken to this city that I'd never heard of called Qingdao. And I was told this is the Chinese Bournemouth. And, you know, we drove along this road, and it was like Bournemouth. I mean, there's wonderful esplanades and seaside and absolutely gorgeous. But the only difference from Bournemouth is there were 6 million people living there. And there are dozens and dozens and dozens of these cities that you and I have never heard of in what is now an immensely powerful, highly successful country, which on most measures probably has an economy as big, if not bigger, than the United States. And it's the Chinese economy that is now pulling the world along, and has been. And if something goes wrong with it, it will affect us all very badly. And the big question which is now up there, which is whether they can continue to sustain this remarkable revolution, economic revolution, that has taken place since the death of Mao Zedong. And they've got problems, but by and large, they're pretty smart people and they're getting around them. I think the final point I just want to make is this, and I come back to the politics again, that in many ways, the long-term impact of this economic heart attack has disappeared. You know, we still have these monetary issues around interest rates and so on, but it's not something we're very conscious of, and it's in the background. But one of the things which has been changed, perhaps permanently, is that it's destroyed the traditional ways in which we thought about politics. Because what's happened over these 7 years is that an awful lot of people have been hurt very badly, actually usually younger people, not so much in the UK, but throughout Western Europe, United States and elsewhere. And a lot of those people are very angry. And what's emerged from that is a new kind of politics, what we sometimes call the politics of identity, in which people are preoccupied by nation, race, religion, not the kind of things that we used to argue about. And we've seen the consequences of that in the United States. We can see it in France. We've seen what's happened in Austria last week. And it's happening here with the debates that we're having in the UK about whether Britain should stay united or break up Scotland, whether we should stay in Europe or not, about immigration, issues of identity. It's a new kind of politics, and it's a very dangerous kind. I don't want to open up here the debate that you're going to hear over the next month every night on television, but that's very much part of this new world. And I try to anticipate it, hopefully, in a constructive way in this book. But thank you for giving me a hearing, and thank you very, very much for inviting me back. Thank you.
The Oldie Magazine Recordings. This is a Radio Gorgeous production for The Oldie 2015.